Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. Do not forget to buy lentils, or the lentil soup you're making for dinner will be sorely lacking. By the way, Mrs. Calloway says thanks for helping her bundle home and auto. She appreciates the extra savings, even though you kept using the word apropos incorrectly. But the main thing is, do not forget to buy, what was it? Something apropos the lentil soup. Sorry, I'll call you back.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 134 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there and leave a review once you're on that page as well. Find us on audioboom.com too and log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site. And you can find all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week. Hope you enjoyed the weekend. I'm on Monday through Friday. This week, just like every other. Today's show is going to be a little bit shorter than usual. I know I did a short one, last Thursday too, but so I'm in Cleveland right now. Just saw the Cavaliers beat the Thunder 107-91 on Sunday afternoon. It's about 10 p.m. right now. Had to write a decent amount after the game, then had to come back, outline the podcast, all that fun stuff. And I have a super, super early flight tomorrow. I have to be up at around 3:30 in the morning for my flight, and I would like to get at least 4 hours of sleep. So it's going to be a little bit of a quicker than usual podcast, but you're getting something. Before I do podcast, I just want to say something because obviously with the non-basketball events of the weekend, I know many Americans had a really rough weekend and maybe have had a really rough week and a half. I'm not going to turn this into a political podcast because I know you guys come to me and you come to me for basketball. So that's kind of my way of helping, I think, in some ways. Look, sometimes in really rough times, sports can be a really nice distraction. It can be a really nice way to look away and be happy about something for a little bit. I think that's the best way for me at least to contribute with this podcast. Act as a distraction for people who are upset right now. And when you want to get your Thunder news in, I'm going to be here for you. And if you want to talk about other stuff too, I'm here for you too. And I'm here for everybody because I know for a lot of people, many people, maybe most people, this has been a really, really rough week and a half. Let's talk a little bit about the Thunder, though. Cavaliers beat the Thunder 107-91 on Sunday afternoon, earliest game of the year. 3:30 start time local, 2:30 in central time. Russell Westbrook had another triple-double, 20-12-10, 24th triple-double of the year. He's now averaging one every other game. Steven Adams had 7-10, Oladipo had 17, then there were the big ones in Cleveland, obviously. Tristan Thompson had 19 and 12 boards. Kyrie Irving was awesome, especially in the second half. 29 points, 10 assists. LeBron was just like LeBron. 25, 14, and 8. Seeing him in person is just an amazing thing. Like, he is the most unbelievable passer. Like, he still has a great argument for best passer in the NBA. Just makes, like, three unbelievable passes, at least. That's like the baseline is three unbelievable passes every game where you're just like, what the hell did he just do? And it is amazing to watch that he is just still, he's still the best. He's just still so comfortably the best. Russell Westbrook's triple-double was unimpressive, I thought, by Westbrook standards, obviously. If you're ranking the 24 triple-doubles this year, this one's near the bottom. Maybe it's at the bottom. 7-for-26 shooting, only 4 turnovers, which considering how much he handles the ball and his seasonal numbers, that's not so bad. But 7-for-26 shooting and really struggled to finish around the rim. They missed a lot of layups in this one. 14-of-32 on shots at NBA.com play-by-play data classified as layups. That's not very good. They shot 20-of-38 in the restricted area. For reference, shots within 3 feet of the rim. League average, I think, according to Basketball Reference, is like 63% this year, 20-for-38, and they missed a lot of open layups, especially in the first quarter. Like, they were just missing. They missed some fast break layups where there was nobody there. They missed some, like, maybe there was a guy near, but it was a good look and a good opportunity where they could have finished type of layup. Kyle Singler had one where he received a pass on a cut and literally didn't even hit anything. He just missed everything. It was weird to see them miss so many layups. I'm not saying they definitely would have won the game if they made those layups, because they lost by 16, and Cleveland played a good defensive game. And a good amount of it, good amount of those layups missed. Now, they did miss some open ones, no question, but Tristan Thompson played a great defensive game. He was awesome, rotating and help, coming over in pick-and-roll defense, protecting the rim. He deterred Russell Westbrook on a bunch of layups, especially in the fourth quarter, where Westbrook was going into penetration, trying to get there, and Thompson would come over and protect the rim, and Westbrook didn't even attempt the shot. He tried to dump it off to Steven Adams, and it never really worked. And that's what you get. That's what a good rim protector does. He doesn't just block shots. He deters shots. He affects the way the guys behave when they're in the paint, when they're going at the rim, when they're around the rim, no matter how good those guys are. And if you can get Russell Westbrook to change the way he plays and dump off like that to Steven Adams and really adjust because of you, and Russell would never admit that's what he was doing, but it did appear from the way that Thompson was playing, from the way that Russell was adjusting. And I'm not saying it was the wrong decision on his part. I'm just saying when you're playing that well and you can force Russell Westbrook to adjust to you, you're doing something right, because he played a really great game, I thought. Let's go for some Twitter questions. First one from Lee Jones, 0920. What trade do you think OKC can make to at least compete in the postseason, and do you think they can get Carmelo Anthony? I get the Melo question all the time. The first thing I'll say is don't hold your breath for Carmelo Anthony, Thunder fans. And here's the thing. I know there's a report out there that says the Thunder are intrigued with Carmelo Anthony. And I'm going to tell you why that report is irrelevant. Not necessarily inaccurate, because I'm sure everyone's intrigued with it. I don't even know it. What is intrigued with Carmelo Anthony means? I'm sure they're intrigued by LeBron James, too. I'm sure they're intrigued by Anthony Davis. And I'm sure they're intrigued by Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard. I don't know what intrigued by Carmelo Anthony means. But here's why it doesn't matter. Because Carmelo Anthony has no trade clause. And unless Carmelo Anthony is intrigued by Oklahoma City, which by all accounts, he's not, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. All this stuff is about leverage. The Knicks don't have any leverage. Carmelo Anthony has it all. He can choose where he wants to go. And right now, historically, Carmelo Anthony is not a guy. He didn't want to be in Denver. And it's not a slight to Oklahoma City. He's just a guy who wants to live in a bigger market. He's always been like that. And his wife is certainly like that, because she's a TV star. They like living there. They like living in New York. It's not like he's dying to leave New York. There are no accounts that say he's dying to leave New York. No one has said that. The Knicks seem to be really pushing to trade him. But there's nothing that says that he's dying to go. And because of that, I don't think he's desperate to come to Oklahoma City. It's not necessarily a slight on Oklahoma City, because you could fill in probably how many NBA cities are there? Two teams in Chicago, two teams in New York. So you got 28 NBA cities. You could probably say the same thing about 25 of the 28 cities. You could just say what I just said, take out Oklahoma City, put in Denver, put in Charlotte, put in Indianapolis, put in probably Dallas even, put in so many other of these markets. That's the way this trade market for him is going to operate. Now, I don't know if for certain he's going to be traded, but I would not hold my breath for Carmelo Anthony, even though it's his name's popping up all over Thunder Twitter. As for who I think OKC can at least compete with in the postseason, or I should say who they can get to compete so they can compete in the postseason, I think they'll compete in the postseason anyway. I don't think they need a star. I'll give a prototype, not a name. If they can get a guy who can play average defense and shoot threes at an average rate, that'll be a help. Now, a plus defender and a plus three-point shooter is hard to find, but if they can get a guy who can shoot threes at an average rate and defend at an average rate, then I think that'll help. I really do, on the wings specifically. From Dave Abbott, what adjustments can the Thunder make with Kanter out? So tonight, Joffrey LeVerne was the first big man off the bench. He went for 13-6. Played a pretty good offensive game, I thought. I thought it was one of his better games of the year with the way he played. He did a good job. He had a really nice stretch in the second quarter, where he was kind of like going head-to-head with LeBron in terms of scoring for like two or three possessions straight, which was a fun little stretch. He was okay. Look, he's not Enes Kanter. He's not Enes Kanter quality-wise. He's a little redundant skills-wise, but stylistically, he's not Kanter. He's not backing down guys. You're not running your offense through him. It's not going to happen. And Billy Donovan decided to stagger Oladipo and Westbrook throughout the game now. So now Oladipo is basically like he was early in the year. He's out there for that second unit with Cameron Payne because you kind of need, you need two ball handlers or at least two playmakers out there, two guys you can give the ball to and try to create a bucket for themselves or for their teammates. You just need that. So what adjustments can the Thunder make? You can run more pick and roll with Oladipo or Payne as a ball handler, with LaVern popping. If you can turn LaVern into a guy who can shoot threes, not a lot of bench bigs can guard that. A lot of bench bigs can struggle with that. And LaVern's shooting well from three. He's not shooting a ton of them. But if he can be a guy that's more comfortable around the three-point range, it's hard for a lot of bench centers to guard. Not a lot of bench centers who are really good at guarding the three-point line. So maybe you try to use that LaVern skill to your advantage. And I think they're going to play matchups. Billy Donovan keeps saying, he keeps saying, by committee. That's the way he's describing it. They replace Enes Kanter by committee because they're not going to have somebody who's going to replicate what Kanter does. So you replace his minutes by committee. I think they're going to play Jeremy Grant at the four more than they were before. Supplies an opportunity. Sabonis played some more minutes. He played 25, 26 minutes against Cleveland today. He played okay. Had some post moves and did a pretty good job. Got some good rebounds. He's going to be a good player, but he's also going to be inconsistent. There are going to be nights where maybe he's not playable for 25, 26 minutes. Those are the nights where you play LaVern. Those are the nights where maybe Collison gets a couple more minutes. Those are the nights where maybe Grant plays more at the four. I think Grant is a four. Ideally, if you have a roster that fits Grant the best, he's a four and not a three. But they need him to play the three because of the way the roster is comprised. I think down the line, when his career is over, he's going to end up playing more four than three. Defensively, he's a four. His shooting doesn't hurt you as much if he's a four, and he's shooting fine anyway. But he's only shooting when he's open. But he's going to be open more when he's a four than when he's a three, because fours are just a little bit less mobile, a little bit worse at closing out on him in the perimeter, all that stuff. So, I think he'll be better off as a four in the long run. I think there's a chance to play him more at the four too. But it all depends on matchups. All depends on who's going where some nights. I think we're going to see some nights where Grant's going to play 28 minutes off the bench. I think we're going to see that when they need his defense or something like that. They need him switching on guys. Donovan wants to go to a more aggressive defense where he needs maybe a better help defender on the back line. Like, Cleveland was getting a lot of layups in this game. A lot of layups, and they were getting them off back cuts. OKC didn't help the helper very well at all. And I think in the future, when we see situations like that, we might see some more Jeremy Grant. I think that's a possibility. Final one from Rec Baller. How do you rank Oladipo's finishing? Average, below average, seems to miss a lot of the rim. So he's shooting about 61% inside 3 feet this year, according to Basketball Reference. That was actually coming into the Cleveland game, so I'm a little behind on that. He was one of those guys, he missed a lot of layups, especially in the first quarter. Does seem like he misses a lot of layups he should make. It does seem like he doesn't quite use, he's so athletic, and no one disputes that. But he doesn't always use his athleticism as well as he could. There's some players like that who are just so athletic, and they don't always take advantage of their athleticism. You just don't quite see it as much as you'd like to. I think Oladipo is one of those guys. Here's the stat, though, that I think is interesting with him. His rookie year in Orlando, these are shots inside 3 feet. His rookie year in Orlando, 39% of his field goal attempts came within 3 feet. 39% of them. His second year, it went up to 42% of his field goal attempts came within 3 feet. That next year, only 30%. So it dropped 12 percentage points, came within 3 feet. And this year he's down to 25. Now, part of that is because he's shooting so many more threes than he ever has. 41% of his field goal attempts are from three-point range. And that's cool. He's shooting well from three. He's shooting great on corner threes. 50-some-odd percent on corner threes, which is great. Like, that is a fantastic number. He's been great on those. It seems like he never misses them. So that's awesome. And keep shooting those every single time. Victor Oladipo can't take a bad corner three. I don't care how guarded he is. I'm fine with him taking those shots. He's really, really, really good at it. He's proven that. It's a large enough sample size. We know he's really good at those corner threes. So it's natural to some degree that that's going to come down from where it was 2 years ago. But 25% of your shots at inside 3 feet at the rim, that's not a lot. And it's not a lot for a player with his physical abilities. I wonder how his career progresses. So when he's only 24 years old still, you know, he's still young and he's still developing and he can still get better in a multitude of ways, just like anybody who's 24. I wonder by the time he's 27 what those ratios are going to be. Because he's good. He's had a good year. He's certainly had a good year. I think the extension the Thunder gave him was a good extension. It was a good contract. He's been good. He's a good on-ball defender. Gambles a little too much for my liking off the ball. But he's a plus on-ball defender. He's fine off the ball. He's pretty good chasing guys around screens. If you throw him in the corner, sometimes he'll zone out. But as long as he's being active on defense, if the guy he's guarding is active, so if he's guarding a Redick or tonight a Korver type, if he's guarding a guy on the ball, he's good at all that. He's a plus in all that stuff. And he's shooting threes really well. So he's basically a really good 3-and-D guy right now. But if he can be a guy who can handle the ball and show off ball skills and get to the rim and use athleticism, get to the free throw line, it'll just make him into a far more complete player. And I think it's a possibility. It's just not quite something that we're seeing right now. Going to wrap up. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. You can head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. Or find me on Twitter, @FredKatz, like I said before, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there. You can follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you tomorrow, so I leave for San Antonio, like I said, really early in the morning. But I will be back with you tomorrow. I'll be podcasting from San Antonio to preview the Thunder's game against the Spurs. But until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.